We're all married here. We've all had that, like, pretending to be overly surprised thing. You know, yeah.
I was just jacking off on your porch. Sorry. I mean, no, not jacking off.
Oh, it's crazy. I was just Wikipediaing women's rights here. And yeah. I was just reading some Grace Lee Boggs on the internet.
I have to say, for a second, I thought Noah was going to say, we're all married, so we all know the porch jack-off routine. And I was like, I thought we were going to get like a real intimate view into Noah's marriage, but I guess not.
God-awful movie.
Welcome back to the Gamcast, where each week we sample another selection from Christian cinema because after they cured polio, suffering became harder to find. I'm your host, No Illusions, and sitting to my immediate left is nobody. Heath's unable to join us today, but sitting 81 miles to my right is my bad friend, Eli Bosnick. Eli, how are you this fine afternoon, sir?
Pretty amazing, Noah. Planning to kill a teenage girl. Thank you.
Oh, well, the good news is that when the FBI hears about that, they're not going to do shit. Now, in Heath's stead, we have not one, but two guest masochists with us today. Infamous glutton for punishment, Thomas Smith of Serious Inquiries Only Comedy Shoeshine Opening Arguments and the brand spanking new Philosophers in Space still hasn't learned to ignore our calls. So he's here. Thomas, welcome back.
Hey, yeah, I'm literally only here because Heath won't return my calls and I thought I could talk to him and get a message to him. And then I find out he's not here. I wonder, coincidence? I think not.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. And also joining us is new fish Aaron Rabbi of the Embrace the Void podcast and Thomas's new space co-host. Aaron, welcome to God Awful Movies, sir.
Oh, man. Living the dream here.
It is. No, you're not. I can tell you.
No, it's, I mean,
like, that was I've delivered with all the acting chops so of this movie.
I was told this was going to be a shitty movie, and this was like middle of the road. I was excited. did y'all deliberately go soft on me on the first one? Is that what this is about? Like,
yeah, that's how we lure you in.
That's fair.
Yeah, right. The first hit is free. The fact that this is middle of the road for you just makes me wonder what the fuck you watch in your free time. But we'll get to that. But before we do, Eli, tell us what was middle of the road today?
We watched Invisible Enemies. It's the story of a magic pair of glasses that turns you into Alex Jones.
Which is weird because they're actually John Ronson's glasses. But
yeah. And Thomas, how bad was this movie?
Well, I have a perfect measure of how bad this movie was. I don't know if any of you by chance went through the YouTube comments for this. Now, when I say YouTube comments, this is such an obscure piece of Christian garbage that it's not as though this is like trolling. The only people who are on the YouTube comments are like the cast and crew and like some people remember. Right. So I went through the comments. I kid you not. You guys can check the link. One of the top comments is one of the girls who is in the movie and has a non-speaking role found it and commented like, oh, wow, I was in this. How cool is it to see it all these years later? And in response, there's some Christians that are like, oh, yeah, blah, hallowed Jesus, blessed be that, whatever, like supportive stuff. And in the comments, there's a guy who's like trying to be supportive and is a Christian, but the movie is so bad that he can't resist saying, he says, I have the quote here. He says, oh, it's a powerful story. I hope that it could be remade with modern technology and a higher budget. As to be honest, the video effects were quite bad and by today's standards, and the acting is poor. But like I said, still a great story. That is a word-for-word quote. Go look it up. Word-for-word quote of a guy who's trying to be supportive of someone he knows is in this fucking movie. That's how bad it is that a Christian can't resist. Like, yeah, no, it's good, but... so good.
Jesus will forgive you for this. Yeah. I love that he made a compliment sandwich out of it, though. It was a sandwich, but there was still a compliment on either side.
Yeah, I love it, too. Like, just in case next time she's in a fucking shitty Christian movie, she could do better. I don't know what's the point. It's from 1997. What is she going to do?
Thomas, can you provide the link in the show notes so they can find it in the tens of comments that are probably under this link? Yeah. You know, I don't want them to miss out.
Thomas does our show notes, everybody. We don't usually tell people that, but yeah, Thomas does our show notes.
It's a weird business arrangement we have, but
now, Aaron, I have to know, as you're watching through this, and I don't know, I wrote this before I realized that this was middle of the road according to the movies you normally watch, so maybe I've got this, I'm completely off base. But the question I have written in here anyway is, what was the worst excuse you thought of when you were still hoping to back out of this guest appearance?
Yeah, I was going to go with, I did so many of the drugs that I fell over and couldn't get up.
I just want to say right now, I think it's unkind for Aaron to take Heath's excuse for not being on today's show. I think it's unprofessional.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, that exact thing didn't slow Eli down a lick in Seattle, so.
Yes, I did one Eli's worth of drugs, and that's why I can't be here today.
That's serious. Well, are you okay?
I believe it's a 2.5 Bill Hicks or one and a half Jerry Garcias.
Oh, Jesus.
It used to be called a wine house, but, you know, it's mine now.
All right. So now I too found an interesting way to summarize how bad this movie was online. I went to the IMDb page because IMDb basically has everything. And this, I don't think, was an intentional dig at the movie. But when you click on the, like, the trivia and the quotes and all, there's only one thing, and it's a quote, and this is the quote. This is from Adult Jackson. That'll make sense as we go through. The quote is, "It was like a slow-motion swan dive into the toilet." Now, that actually is a quote from the film, not meant to summarize the film, but it just, it magically does. Quick question to everyone as well before we get started. I had this feeling pretty strongly as the movie was wrapping up. Do we have any theories as to where the rest of this movie is? It's just like 38 minutes into the movie, I'm thinking, okay, I see where we're going with this. It's over. Okay. Yeah, maybe
the rest of the movie is sitting in an unlabeled crate in a warehouse. That'll come into play later. You'll see.
Yeah.
The end of the movie isn't about the crate. We put the end of the movie in the crate. It's like a reference, no?
Yeah, no, it's like a Schrodinger's ending. I get it, yeah. So, no, that's better. My theory was that somebody kidnapped the end of the movie and they couldn't afford the ransom. They spent it all on the lighting. But I like yours better. Now, is there anything you guys want to nominate this one for being the best at being the worst at?
Sure. I've got best worst story gimmick in telling the movie from the future for no fucking reason. Like, you don't have to do that. You can just tell the movie. They said it 30 years in the future. So, by the way, that means like 2024. And are there any, you know, flying cars or any shit like that? Nope. Guess where they are? Guess where their futuristic setting is? A completely empty warehouse from circa 1934. Like, that's their future setting.
They could have at least, like, attached one of the boxes to some strings so it was, like, hovering a little bit, like a hover box.
Yeah.
Well, that was so funny because it comes up right away and it says Earth 2024. And I'm like, oh, a Christian sci-fi. Nope. Let me tell you something that happened in the modern day.
Technically sci-fi, there's MacGuffin, right? There's special items, there's things from alternate image. It's basically Lovecraft, this whole movie.
You know, it is. It is almost indistinguishable from H.P. Lovecraft.
It's like They Live, but like a little bit worse. Just a little bit worse.
We'll get there. Now, did you have any best worsts, or are you just praising all the way?
No, I love it. But like, my best worst was definitely the sock puppeting of a blind girl. Like, I know that they got to push the invisible things are real angle, and that gets incredibly harder as like science manages to be science. But like, dude, you shouldn't be putting things in a blind girl's mouth like that. It's inappropriate.
There are so many self burns that they wrote for this blind girl to do. It's just like, so you guys want to see a movie later? Not me. Damn it. That's like my 9th line in a row. Like that.
I did not see that one coming. Oh, come on, guys.
Okay, so now this is actually a separate girl, not the blind girl, but I was going to go with best worst damsel in distress. At what turns out retroactively to have been the finale of this film, we have a woman in danger. And by danger, I mean 8 feet up and over a crowd of people that could catch her. Right?
They would catch her. By death, she would land on people. There's right. No-
they might be in danger of like a strained neck or something, whatever. But
she's arguably safer on the beam than she is down below in the party. She's probably safer.
Well, right. Honestly, those folks look pretty shady. But yeah, exactly. Yeah. If she was on the fucking ground, maybe somebody would be walking across that beam and fall down on her.
Yeah.
But like, if given that situation, the hero of this movie resorts to magical items and chest lasers. Seemed like overkill. The chest lasers were pretty
sci-fi
awesome.
Chest lasers. It's sci-fi chest lasers.
Exactly. I'm going to piggyback off Thomas here and go with best worst interstitials for time, because we'll get to it, but this movie occasionally stops so that the character telling the story can go, should I keep telling the story? Yes. Got it. It's like someone saw The Princess Bride, wrote punk fake a lot in their notes, and then just made this movie.
Yeah, and they had to overcompensate too, because it wasn't just like, oh yes, you should keep telling it. They're like, no, let's make it so it's so obvious you should keep telling it that we'll be sarcastic about it. We'll go like, oh, no, you should stop right now. Get out of here. Of course you keep telling it.
Right, and there's not even like a reason, right? Like in Princess Bride, there was kind of a reason for Grandpa to be like, you getting into the story now? You get, huh? You like it now? But in this movie, it's just like, yeah, okay, we were at 34 minutes. 2024, guys?
But do you really, really, really want to hear the story?
The reason is to catch a glimpse into the future of warehouses.
Oh, well, yeah, right. Yeah.
But the reason was to introduce the breakout acting star that was his son, who I really thought needed to be in more of this movie. Whew, the delivery.
Yeah, no, this movie could have used a little more trip. All right, well, I guess I've kind of put this off as long as I could, but eventually we have to break this piece of shit down or we're not really doing the show. So we're going to pause for a quick break, and when we come back, we'll dive into all the haphazard happenings that are Invisible Enemies.
Hey, folks, No Illusions cutting in here to remind you that there's more GAM lurking just below the surface. As a special bonus for our patrons, we record an extra episode every month where we break down a secular flick that's bad enough to qualify as an honorary god-awful movie. This month, in honor of Valentine's Day, we broke down the worst-reviewed rom-com of all time, American Idol's very own from Justin DeKelly. Here's a taste of what you're missing.
Guys, this movie was 2 years after 9/11, and I feel like this is how we healed.
If I'm going to watch something this misogynistic, I'm going to jack off to it, damn it. Come on.
I'm watching porn, damn it.
Okay, well, it didn't preclude anyone from jacking off. That's a weird thing to say. But
you know what? They do actually have lovely singing voices. Maybe they should have made this a singing contest instead of a movie.
And it escalates so quickly out of nowhere. He's just like, I need you to work tonight. And she's like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Peace, land, bread. Like, God fucks. Like, what? Relax.
I would pay $8 million if there had been a fight scene in this movie to watch these two actors attempt a fight scene. Just Justin just shatters into panes of beautiful pink glass. Just like explodes into glitter.
So if you'd like to hear the whole episode, plus 19 other bonus episodes and a new one every month, you can pledge as little as $1 per episode at patreon.com/godawful. That's patreon.com/godawful. And now, back to the show.
And we're back for the breakdown, and we're going to start off in a poorly lit attic. And spoiler alert, poorly lit is going to be something of a theme in this film.
I wrote in my notes, here we are in that warehouse from Indiana Jones when they put in the very first box.
Well, I think they were going for Indiana Jones warehouse, but they could only afford like three boxes and they don't know that those were painted in originally.
Yeah, and they've lifted the music from Temple of Doom. So all the while there's this Temple of Doom demon music, but we're looking at nothing. So and then as the father and son start to walk in, the music and the lighting is like he's leading his son to his first human sacrifice, like you do with your son.
Yeah. This got me wondering, are there Gregorians for Satanists? Do they have like a chanting sect? I want to buy their CDs. I'm into that.
Yeah, I wrote in my notes here, music note, can music be a pop scare?
Yeah. Well, and so here's the thing. Eli has brought up on the show a number of times before that before we're done watching Christian movies, we will have watched an opening with a creepy everything. Right? So we've watched movies where there's like a creepy bakery, a creepy button, we watched a creepy lunchbox the other day. But this is the first time we've ever been asked to watch a creepy nothing.
Yeah.
Well, I know that you don't live in Brooklyn, but truthfully, going to see any loft apartment in NYC looks exactly like a horror movie. So I was already pulled right into this. And then it was like, there's blood on the walls. I'm like, great, it's 13 a month. The walls can bleed. It's fine. No problem suspension of disbelief here.
Yeah, 13. That's not bad.
So yeah, in an elevator building? Are you kidding? I'll set up a blood fountain. You just saved me murdering four Girl Scouts a year.
Yeah, jeez. So this is where we learn that we're in the future, right? So the dad and son show up. Yeah. And it comes up and it's like 2024 AD. That will, as we've already alluded to, never fucking matter.
And I just want to point out how terrifying it is to me that crazy future dates from the 1980s are now 6 fucking years away. We are a doctorate away from the year 2024. And I'm like, oh, okay. We don't have flying cars. No.
And it's like the only magical item in this movie is from the past. It's like you didn't even use the future thing to do like a future sci-fi glasses thing or something.
Right. Yeah. You could add Google goggles. You could add satanic Google goggles. This would have made perfect sense.
And the people in charge of this movie were like, hey, in the future, do you think people will have different haircuts? And like, no. It'll still be 90s style bowl cuts, but everybody will get their hair cut with a chainsaw, so it'll be terrible. Like, that's the future.
In the future, supercuts is king. No! That's really scary.
Keep waiting for Morpheus to show up and be like, this isn't the real.
Yep. So, okay, so now here's how this plays out. Dad and son walk in here. Dad gives son a whole, like, I just want you to know that life isn't neutral. This whole scientific idea of forces and natural laws is a load of shit. Try on my magic glasses.
Yeah, he literally says, go on, try them on. And I thought to myself, damn, these Warby Parker ads are getting viral as fuck. They're really working them into programs now.
If you don't like these frames, I can send them back.
And don't worry, if you need to send me some money for these glasses, try stamps.com.
Yeah, right.
I was pretty jealous because, like, never has a hero acquired magic items more easily. Like, I've spent longer in video games trying to get a fucking wooden sword so that I can kill some first level bitches. Here, take this MacGuffin, you fucking bastards.
Oh, that's great, though. Capitalism, the video game, you just start out Zelda, your dad hands you the special sword and shield. You fucking, Ganondorf is brown, so the cops just shoot him buying some Skittles, and you just walk around with your princess for the rest of your life.
It's capitalism, so conservatives can be like, look, I made my own living. It started when I was a kid and my parents loaned me $100,000. And then my own way.
I'm just thinking, like, fucking Republican Zelda would be awesome because they'd have the Second Amendment. Right? Like, how much easier would that shit be? Yeah. Silver arrow, my ass. You're coming out with me the boomerang and I've got an AK?
We're just going to build a wall to keep all these weird monsters on the other side of the border. Problem solved.
Yeah, we don't need to solve underwater temple. People who live in underwater temple choose to live in underwater temple. That's their choice.
Oh my God, we just realized that Zelda is Republican allegory. That's for Thomas's new podcast. It's called What Do Video Games Really Mean? With a guy he had on his show 3 times.
He's going to zero in on that hate listener audience, though.
All right, so anyway, back to this movie. And so there's no easy way to segue back in, so I just have to do the clean break there. So now the father has handed his son what he's led him to believe are magic glasses. The son looks through him and is like, yeah, that's, you know, they're just going to give me a headache. And he's like, yeah, the magic only works on me. I'm like, is this a Mormon movie?
Yeah, this is the first of many signs of mental illness that I want to discuss in this movie.
Exactly. This is like the Mystery Men power where the guy can turn invisible as long as no one's looking at him.
Right.
And they spend this whole movie comparing this stuff to science. And I'm like, if I look through a microscope and you look through a microscope, we see the same shit. It's not like magic glasses. This is not a good metaphor for your team.
I thought you were the philosophy guy. Aren't you supposed to be like, what if my blue is your green? Please give me tenure.
No, I'm not one of those fucking
postmodernists. That's not from the philosophy. That's from all the drugs.
Eli, have you ever seen a real philosophy? Eli, have you ever encountered an actual philosophy? A unit of...
In the wild.
I follow a certain Canadian professor. I don't know if you guys are aware, but he's pretty much got it all on lockdown.
Moving right along. Okay. So dad is telling the son, says the son's like, well, what's up with the magic glasses? And dad says, well, let me tell you a movie. And it starts with your mother and I, well, Cindy and I, they, I feel like they think that this is a surprise ending, that it's going to, is going to be the mother.
The surprise at the end is they got married eventually, apropos of nothing.
Well, yeah, it's surprising, right, but, because she ended up as a psychologist, which means at some point she had a fall from grace, right? So, like, well, it's weird that they're still together because, like, she's a psychologist and we know about psychologists. Mm.
It, honestly, this movie might as well end with, and Dre lost a toe to diabetes. So, you know, that's neat, right?
Yeah, it's gotta so watch that fucking random. But so, but he's telling the kid the story. And if you think about it, if this wasn't his wife, this would be really weird that he'd be telling the story of like some other girlfriend he had before. But he says, I was going on a trust walk with Cindy. Now that's apparent. Cindy is blind. So Cindy is in the habit of blindfolding her friends and making them walk around with her.
To take him down a peg.
Well, yeah. No, because my mother's in a wheelchair. She insists that I wheel next to her as often as possible.
Yeah.
She doesn't like it when I walk.
So I Googled this, and this is the worst pot, because I was like, this can't be real. It's real, but what it's for is for family members of the visually impaired. It's something they recommend you do, like, around your home so you can see what your family member might be going through, what they might need assistance with. It is definitely not, take your blind person on a walk. You get a blindfold. They get a blindfold. No dogs, no sticks. Just see what happens.
Now, as they're walking... Now, as they're walking, someone honks at them and the guy jumps, you know, but the girl doesn't jump because, you know, she's used to this. Someone honks at them. And I thought, please, God, can the movie just be about the person who drives around the block looking for blind women to honk at? Because I want to know everything about that person. I want to know that entire character. Like he honks at a blind, like, oh, startled you. Sorry.
Got her. Well, yeah. No, see, all of the Christian movies take place in the same universe. So he was on his way to a ballet so he could laugh and make fun of a girl in a wheelchair. There's a reward to listening to all the episodes. Okay. Anyway, so we learned that when dad was a kid, this is dad's name is Jackson, is the character's name. Is that right?
Yeah. And I have an actor's note for this guy. And you don't really see it until he puts on the demon glasses, but it's John Lennon before he did the drugs that made him cool. Ooh. He is uncool John Lennon.
I have him as alternate universe Bo Burnham.
Yeah, there you go.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
Without the glasses, he's like James Vanderbeek if he went nowhere after Dawson's Creek.
Did he go somewhere after Dawson's Creek?
I feel like Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back is a classic motherfucker. Air you smash on Viewaskew.
Okay, so but now when he was young, his dad died, and he was pretty fond of his sister. That's going to be important later. And I say that because, like, they will make a hard left back into that storyline as though we were already there.
Yeah, hard and like, close are the important adjectives, I think, for describing their relationship.
Thomas, do me a favor. Can you tell us how they find the magic glasses? Do you mind telling?
I would love to. So this is funny. At my old work, we actually were very near this center for the visually impaired. So actually quite frequently, there would be people walking around all the time with the long cane, you know, like she's using. And would it shock you to learn that she's doing this completely fucking wrong?
Yeah,
would
right.
Would anybody be surprised? Right. She is playing the sidewalk like it's a fucking snare drum in a jazz solo.
Yeah, like she's going to tap out something and hear it like a fucking bat or a snake or something. Yeah.
They don't do that. They don't tap. It's just hovers. But anyway, she's tapping at a width of maybe 6 inches. And then all of a sudden, she swings it 90 degrees over to off the sidewalk and taps exactly on this old glasses case. I guess that's what it means to be a highly skilled blind lady, but call forward.
Right. And what's amazing is she goes, "Oh, what's that?" And he's like, he's doing the trust walk thing. And he's like, "I don't know. What is it?" And she's like, "No, man, take off the, you can take off the disability. So please take off the disability and tell everybody what's there. Don't, I can't. Just do it. Come on. Don't be a dick."
The banter between them is really, really clutch here. And I love that I get the impression that like the sound effects guy was getting paid per sound effect. So like, that's why you get that like snare drum thing. And then you get like when he leans down to pick up the box thing, it's like you get that classic shikashika sound effect.
Yeah, right. No, they found an old glasses case complete with Satan noises. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What is it with demons and whispering? Is it, do they need to keep it down? It's like every demon is like, can't they just be like, "Hi, I'm a demon. I'm here in these glasses." Is there some, is it a demon library that they're in or something?
Yes. And I have to talk about this moment. So he opens the glass. He's like, "Oh, it's an old pair of glasses." And she's like, "Are they tinted? Are they tinted? Because I'm a blind person. I love it." Yeah. She's like cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs with blind person glasses. I wanted her to do that for everything. You'd be like, "Oh, there's a window. Is it tinted? Is it a tinted window? I can wear those. I'm a blind person."
Oh. And then he's like, "They're not tinted." And she's like, "Oh." And it's like, they play it for a joke. It's like the blind chick doesn't wear tinted glasses joke is a reference that they're making. Like, that's a shtick that they play together.
Now, okay, and I've got to throw this out here. If I were to, say, find an old glasses case sitting on the side of the road, I would not adopt it and make it my own. Right? I would throw it away, or I'd leave it there because maybe that person would come back looking for their glasses.
It's like you found an old retainer and you're like, "Oh, let me just pop that bad boy in.
It's mine now."
But not Jackson. Jackson is so fucking stoked. He's like some kind of weird hoarder. He takes these home and just masturbates over them for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, my theory is that he can hear the sound effects that the dude's putting in, because like, if you leaned over and found a retainer and when you picked it up, it was like, "Shh, kill your family." Like, you would explore that retainer a little bit more. Like, you'd want to know about that retainer some.
I feel like you'd be like, apropos of nothing, can we trust walk to a hospital? I'm experiencing something now.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, but now we should point out that there is some devil Latin written on the frames. Now, when I say devil Latin, what I mean is a Harry Potter spell that ends in the word Diabolus.
God knows what they were trying to write in Latin. I later did it. When he says it, I have it in my notes what it is. It's like one man and the devil alone. It's like the world's worst slash fiction is actually what's written in the Latin. But what they interpreted it as later, like no grammar, no spelling. It's just like, these might be Latin.
Yeah, no, the devil himself is more real than this Latin.
No, I mean, literally went through a Latin English dictionary and just found similar words as though Latin would have the exact same structure as English and there would be no conjugation.
I wish you were right, but a diablo is Spanish, man. There is no a diablos in Latin. That's not a thing. I don't, maybe the church put it in later, but I'm like, I took 6 years of Latin and like, I Googled this shit, and I'm pretty sure there's no a diablos in Spanish. Latin, Spanish word, because we don't have a good Latin word for this.
But there's definitely biblioteca in Latin, right? That's on there.
There is a biblioteca.
A diablos in la biblioteca, I think is what, that's why they're
whispering. Devil has a lovely bunch of coconuts. I will say, when I ran it through the Google Translate to Latin, diablos was like the one word it could figure out, so I... The rest of it is like, it's just giving me back what I wrote. So yeah,
I did the same thing and it automatically corrected me like six times. Cause I don't use Google Translate. I use this other Latin program. And it was just like, poor grammar, poor spelling.
Yeah. Google Translate is like, you're a Russian bot. We're disabling your ability to use the program.
So he stares at the Latin for a little bit, and then he goes to try him on like Frodo putting on the One Ring.
Right. Oh, hold on, though. I wanted to hear Eli describe this sweet, sweet room for like an hour. I would listen to a podcast series, next podcast by Thomas Smith. Thomas interviews Eli on this room.
It's all pop culture posters with something slightly wrong. Like, it's a poster, but it's just oats. Or it's like, it's a Star Wars poster, but it's only of the Wookiee. Like, everything is just a slightly Christianized version of pop culture. Legos, but they're only blue.
And on his door, hanging on his door, is a single wooden tennis racket. Like, just hanging, he sportses a lot.
Well, and there's just CDs stapled to the wall everywhere because kids love those CDs with the music on them.
World lives in the mandala effect. The Judge Bread poster.
So he goes to put on the glasses all like, you know, Frodo put on the One Ring suspensefully. But before he can quite get them on, because you know when you put on glasses, there are steps, there are phases where you've almost got them. Anyway. Yeah. Before he can get them all the way on, we have to meet Black Friend, who pops in to tell him that he's needed in the next scene.
He literally pops in and says, "Hey, Black Friend!" Like, it's pretty much that's his entrance.
And the movie's diverse. How you doing?
I don't want to give it away, but I'm going to be evil later. But you don't want to be surprised, right? One black guy. I mean, you know, it's going to go.
I love the logistics of this because Black Friend showed up. And by the way, his name in the movie is Dre. So I can, if I call him Black Friend or if I call him by the name they gave him, it's less racist.
Literally the only black name they know.
Right. But he basically comes in and he says, "Hey man, it's time for science class." Now they're in college. So, like, this guy just shows up at his home?
Yeah. I was trying to figure that out. I was like, so it's a dorm room, right? But then later, he's right next door to his sister's room and his house. Like, what?
And his mom lives there. Yeah,
right. Yeah. So,
this was the largest continuity problem I had in this whole movie. I was like, they're in high school or college? Figure it out, people, because this is making no sense.
So, now we cut to science class for... Now, look, we have watched 132 Christian movies, more than 132 Christian movies. But if there is one thing that this movie does the best, it is clumsy exposition in the classroom that the movie is about. Because this science teacher is just like, there are lots of things that we can't see that are real.
Hold on.
Bacteria, angels, Jesus's love. And fade away.
My note is, it cuts in and the quote is, "There are plenty of things that are real," is a thing a professor says in a class. Like, what is the class? The class is things that are real, 101. Yeah. Lots of things are real.
The platypus is real. They didn't think so at first, but today we're going to do platypus.
The first semester covers things A through F that are real. The next semester is...
Can we just talk about how much religion is super jelly of science at this point?
Yeah. They're like, yes!
Science found their invisible shit. Can we find our invisible shit? Clearly it's the same kind of, like, it's got to be out there. And, like, they did it, and we're the same. So, like, please.
Right. I love how they abuse the Kelvin example here.
Yeah, right. If you don't believe in x-rays, then you should believe in anything invisible.
Well, also, they mistell the story entirely. Because Kelvin was just like, "I don't know, I haven't seen it. They keep telling me that rocks make your bones see through. Doesn't seem real to me." And then he saw it and he was like, "Oh, rocks make your bones see through." He wasn't like a 9/11 truther making takedown videos of Marie Curie.
No, I think you're being a little hard on this scene because, like, this is roughly identical to every scene in at least one H.P. Lovecraft adaptation. Like, this is, I think I'm pretty sure that professor is in the Reanimator movie. Like,
no,
it's the exact same plot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Every horror movie loves to use this whole, like, there's all kinds of stuff that we can't see that's real. It's like, yeah, but we can detect all of it, can't we? Oh, fuck, that fucks it up. That fucks it right yeah. up.
Yeah, when I get an X-ray of something, I can see the X-ray.
Right.
There's my bones. Wow, I'm looking at my bones. Okay, I believe it.
Yeah, no, but they have a checkmate move waiting because they have a blind girl. So you guys watch out. They are coming at you with that blind girl.
So good.
All this, the things unseen illusions are so thick. Eskimos are huddling under them by this point. We're 6.5 minutes into this movie. We have had 8 clever little references to that. Oh, I don't see it, but it's still real. Yeah, you're blind. No, I know, though. So then the science teacher wants to show him a cartoon like they do in college.
Yeah. And the protagonist, Jackson, uses this opportunity to once again put the glasses on in slow motion. And we don't see what he sees yet. So when he puts them on, all we see is that he is instantly covered in sweat. And really, really just wanted that to be what the power of the glasses were. Just like anyone puts them on and they're soaking wet. It's just like, oh, I am...
He is 100% coming in these glasses. It is the hardest. It is shot for shot of just, you could put this on Pornhub with dude finds magical cum glasses and it would be 100% the exact porno you would think it would be.
Are we missing
really don't want any competition to my dude finds cum glasses, so please do not upload this. My video now has 7 hits. Really excited for the big double digits.
Eli, a rising tide lifts all ships, so come on.
Come on.
Encourage the art.
No. I have a joke, but it's just going to get cut from our show, so I'm just going to... I'll save no one an edit point. How you doing, Noah? How you doing, Morgan?
We love our community of podcasters, is what Eli was just saying before that imaginary edit. So, okay, so yes, he very clearly comes, and then he runs out of the fucking classroom like an idiot, directly into a wall. I don't think, because if they were going for funny, this would have been stupid, but I don't think they were.
Has he ever been to this school before? I forgot about that wall.
Has he ever been to a hallway before? Yeah. That's how they all work. When you walk out, there's a wall right in front of you.
And by the way, hold on. By the way, if you are trying to dispel the idea that you just put on magical cum glasses, getting up and going, I gotta go, and running out of the room is not the way to do that. I just wanted to say.
I just read this as the, like, he was really dehydrated. Like, I wanted to see, like, a marathon volunteer come in with, a Gatorade bottle or something and be like, hey, get back in the game, man. Put those glasses back on. Go for another round.
And so we cut from him running into a wall to him immediately looking up what he saw, and he's looking at the internet in alphabetical order.
The whole internet, yeah.
The whole internet, okay. Right? Because he's like, Latin music.
Yeah, no. Okay, so I have to point this out. Like, back when this was made, there were alphabetical search engines. And a lot of them were, like, Yahoo was originally an alphabetical search engine because people were just so fucking stupid that they're like, yeah, no, it's like the Yellow Pages. It goes in alphabetical order. So that's, like, as ridiculous as that seems from the modern day at that time, kind of normal.
But Noah, right? He says literally out loud as he's scrolling down the word down over and over again. Like, do you remember when the internet required you to verbally say down while you scrolled?
You had to narrate your Google search.
Yeah.
Question, is that why your generation is so into anal? Like, you went on the porn site and you were like, ah, I'm not making it down to blowjob. Anal's fine. It's fine.
We are a very,
are you shitting
very
me?
Lazy
Deep
generation.
Throat? No way, man.
It was a weird design. I'll agree.
That's why we were so into Asian women, for sure.
We are meant to believe that there is an engraving on these 0.03 millimeter diameter wireframes. He's literally mm-hmm. holding like, they're just these, it's like a string that makes up these frames. We are meant to believe that he holds up a Sherlock Holmes magnifying glass to it, which, by the way, totally normal dorm thing or whatever, college guy thing. Sherlock Holmes magnifying glass to it. And the close-up shot is very clearly just a piece of copper piping that they like wrote on.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Right,
but this is where we are first introduced to the pseudo-Latin, the literally Harry Potter spell that's written onto the end of this fucking thing. And then we cut to him, you know, because he looks at it and he's like, oh, this is sure going to take a while to translate. And I'm like, only because that's not real Latin. It would be almost instantaneous otherwise.
Look, I just want to like point out in this scene that like while he's looking at this Latin, he's having a conversation to himself about the nature of mental illness that like was the second time in this movie when my ableism flag started to go off a little bit, because it was like, no, only crazy people think they're crazy, and I'm not, but I do think I'm crazy, so clearly I am crazy, and I'm like, this is not an okay conversation to be having.
He turns to the mirror. You a retard? Are you a retard?
One second, I have some slurs.
No, mommy. To call myself. I'm not going to do it, mom.
Starts giving himself a wedgie. So, you know how when you find magic glasses that deeply affect your vision, the first mm-hmm. thing you want to do with them is drive around?
Yes, yes.
That's well, no, the next not only scene. That.
First, you want to get in the car and then talk to the glasses. Like, they're in the front seat, and he's like talking to them as though they're his friend. You know, again, carrying on that crazy conversation. And it's a good idea when you find demonic cum glasses to jump in the car, get behind the wheel, and strap on those demonic cum glasses while you're driving. That's a great plan.
Well, I guess the idea is that he's got to get to Bible study, but on the way to Bible study, he really wants to check this thing out or something. So it's doing a little like Demons and Drive kind of thing.
Well,
like,
you know, we all have a refractory period, and he was ready, he was recovered.
And he's ready to go again.
And this is where we finally see what he sees through the glasses. And it's just demons cueing people to do worse and worse things. Only some of which are remotely evil. Like the first one, it's like, go on, Google the answer to your homework. And then it's like, you should yell at her back. And then it's rape. It's literally it's like, you know what's bad? Cheating on your homework, marital troubles, and raping people. You shouldn't rape people.
This is where I got kind of confused because, like, as far as I could tell, when he put these glasses on, all they did was make clear to him that human beings are trash, which is like, that's not special. My glasses do that every day. These are not magic glasses. Glasses.
Well, no, he puts on magic glasses and they enable him to see a bunch of sounds that he hears.
That's yes,
makes no sense.
Right.
He just hears what's happening in houses. Like, what?
Should have got one of those like demon ear cones, you know?
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
demons?
So we get that. We get him driving around looking at the houses and yes, just hearing people being angry in the houses. And also we've got to believe he lives in the most dysfunctional fucking neighborhood in the world. Yeah. There's like six houses and everyone's being evil in each house. No
every
one's just watching
one.
The news.
No, every single house. There's an evil, like, critical evil decision being made as we talk right now.
At that exact second, yeah. Well, evil tends to happen at 8:21, I guess. Yeah. But, okay, then we cut to what I at first thought was a roof party. It's going to turn out to be a Bible study. A bunch of, like, grown-ups at a Bible study.
Yeah, right. And
my favorite scene
again,
in the movie.
It opens on the blind girl zinging herself for being blind again.
I know, it's so
it's like, you know, the Lord tells us to believe in things he can't see. And she's like, better work for me. Am I right? Hi-yo-go. Are they applauding? I can't tell. Or is that thunder? I slipped on a banana peel, but it might have been the floor.
Yeah, it opens with, so you don't believe in angels and demons because you can't see them, right? No, literally no one thinks that there's no angels and demons just because we can't see them. God. Someone tell me, I need to know. This is what, by the way, where we meet the girl that was in the YouTube comments section. She is the girl that is sitting there silently. And I need to know her backstory. Someone please tell me, because the best I can figure, there must be some sort of Saw-esque premise going on where somebody's like attached to a machine, because they are required to sit there in a Bible study. But we've already learned that this couple that they're, you know, proselytizing to, they aren't believers, but they're just sitting silently, eating up every word of the apologetics 101 spiel that every Christian movie has. And they're not allowed to respond. When they say, oh, let's take out their Bibles, they have a Bible, but like they're they're not religious. So is it does somebody have their kids? Is it a jigsaw? What is happening?
Yeah. Thomas, you need to check your not having lived in the South and not having friends who are part of an MLM privilege, okay? Can I tell you that right now? Because I've had so many silent sit, and now let's take out our random book that I care about that you don't conversation. Boy. Oh, scented oils.
And they have that 10,000-yard stare when the friend shows up, too, where they're just like, don't make eye contact,
They have 10,000-yard stare. I think Jigsaw has their kid in a trap in the background. Like, I'm pretty sure. He's like, if you respond,
and they're staring at the kid, this would make sense, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's like, I know there's a really obvious rebuttal to this terrible apologetic argument, but you can't say a thing or I'll kill your child.
So they're having their little Bible study. They're having the goddamn conversation about how angels and demons are like gravity and radio waves and all the other things that exist that you can't see. And Jackson suddenly runs in and basically goes, hey, guys, you're not going to believe how stupid the precept of this movie is. And now the reactions from his friend, though, in this movie, he runs in and he's like, guys, I have something really important to tell you. And Black friend's like, hold on. We were already having a conversation, Jackson. What the fuck is wrong with this guy? That would be his reaction. It's absolutely an unhuman of a reaction.
Yeah, they're like, this is the first time someone hasn't instantly shot down our shitty apologetics. Shut up.
I wanted a montage of Dre just not wanting to be interrupted by people on fire. A woman runs up. Excuse me. Anyway,
I was reading a Bible passage.
I did wonder if like they were in a special cult where like being late to Bible studies was like the worst sin. It's like raping babies is okay, but like, don't ever show up 5 minutes late when Dre has started rapping, because
they
pretend that he's not even a person anymore. Like, he showed up late. He is excommunicated.
Yeah, right. Do you guys hear a noise? So they shut him the fuck up and let the blind girl keep speaking. Of course, she's going to now read the Armor of God verse. Now, as a veteran Christian movie watcher, what I can tell you about the Armor of God verses is that if you hear that verse spoken in a Christian movie, the point of this movie is going to be to try to make evangelicalism seem cool, right? Like, from that point on, it's going to be like, oh, but if you think about it, when you annoy people about Jesus, you're really fighting demons with a sword, aren't you, though?
I mean, it makes sense that they would put that in the mouth of a girl who looks like a Hot Topic, went blind and converted to Christianity. Like, she's got the really sexy little cross and like the low cut black and like the black glass, like, really choice. Right.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of good going on in this movie, but she looked damn good. Yeah, no, she was a nice haven
and
for my
this
eyes.
Guy says, the guy who walks in with glasses says, he said, and I quote, it's all right here in plain Latin. And he has not even translated it yet. The next scene is going to be him translating this for about 47 hours.
I'm pretty sure it's all right here in plain Latin.
It's all right here in plain Latin that I don't know what it says. I haven't figured it out yet, but it's all right here in plain Latin.
And it's not even plain Latin. I love that so much.
This is by far the most textbook schizophrenic breakdown I've seen in any sort of movie. I mean, like, you guys are probably used to that, but like, for me, I was like, don't y'all want to help your friend? Like, he's having a psychotic episode. Like,
and that's what's so amazing is that, like, when he comes in and is like, no, I can actually see demons, they're like, come on, man, we're playing book pretend. Don't pretend they're not. Right? Because that's, look, if you actually believed in demons and someone ran, if someone was like, hey, there's a bat in your house, you'd be like, oh, fuck, there's a bat in here? And someone's like, there are demons in here, I'd be like, oh, okay, well, we're going to go to St. Vincent's. They'll help you with the demons. Yep. Yeah. I'll get your glasses resized for you, buddy.
They're not even interested in his well-being. Like, they clearly in a state of mental derangement or in a breakdown or something. They're like, guys, we're trying to do some Christian apologetics. Can you relax with your mental illness for one night? Yeah, one right. night you relax.
And like, this is my favorite moment because he tries to get the black guy to put the glasses on. And like, as soon as I read the premise of this movie, I'm like, it's a Christian version of They Live. I'm so excited. And I was really hoping the black guy was going to be like, no, I won't put the glasses on. And then like the white guy was going to like rowdy Piper, like beat the shit out of him in an alley for like 5 minutes and then force him to put the glasses on. That was my entire hope about this whole movie. And he just puts the glasses on and it ruined everything for me. So that was, yes. That was when this movie lost me right there.
It was good up until that.
It was good up until now, he didn't beat him like Keith Davis.
But the black guy has the bet, like the most devastating put down of all time. He says to the crazy person, he says, look, we all thought you were funny in high school, but no one's laughing now.
Nobody finds psychotic breaks funny anymore, man.
Yeah. There's a distraught, like psychotic person, and you're putting him down. Like, what do you think he's going to do? He's going to go kill himself. What are you Christians doing in this fucking movie?
Yeah, no, like the idea that like human conversation was an abstract concept to the person that wrote this came up several times in my mind because like, yeah, no, he's going like basically, dude, you're mentally ill. Go away. Wait, what? Yeah, so, but he does. He goes away. He leaves them alone to do their Bible study some more. And he goes back to fucking translate his Harry Potter spell.
He goes back to translate 4 fucking words of plain Latin for 2 days.
Yeah.
This movie is 38 minutes long and 30 minutes of it is him typing things into a computer from the 90s. If they had just had a cutaway of him saying, guys, I translated it, 4.5 minute movie.
I want a sequel to this movie where this guy goes on Wheel of Fortune and they're like, you've uncovered every letter, sir. Would you like to solve the puzzle? And he's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe one more thing.
He's got everything figured out except Diaboli at the end of it. Yeah, he's like, well, I better look that one up too.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Look at that phone friend.
Can I buy a vowel? There's one fucking letter. Yeah. So, okay. So he eventually translates one man, a vision of the devil. Which, okay, you could have made it say any fucking thing, right? Like, you could have said something that made fucking sense. You weren't even using real Latin, so you could have, you know, like, that makes it even easier. But from that, he says, oh, that must mean I'm the only one who can see the evil demons from the glasses. Yeah, now it makes sense.
He reaches... Yeah. He's just so far from what the actual words translate to. He's just like, huh, so I must return these glasses to the one men's store at Bergdorf Goodman's and Mears. Like, that's how it might as well be that.
It could just say MacGuffin, 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 MacGuffin. It'd be fine. It'd
yeah, right, right, exactly. And click your heels together. But okay, so then this story admitted at this point that it was boring as fuck. Right, or the story felt like it needed to give itself a pat on the back, like a you can do this. So we cut back to Dad in this warehouse telling the story from his son, the framing of the movie. And the kid's like, Dad, this story is unbelievable. How did we get such a good DP? Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's just a reminder we're telling this story from the future for no fucking reason. Just in case you forgot.
Yeah, it's really hard to sit your son down for the, you know, magic classes that can see the devil talk. Am I right? You know, that's always a hard moment.
Yeah, and he said, I want to break down, because the kid asked him, why didn't you tell me this before? I want to break down his answer logically, see if he can tell me what it means. He says, I don't know, I watch you, and life isn't neutral. Everything matters. So I'm telling you this story. You want to hear more? Like, that's literally like a drop in the
dust. Yes, it is.
What? I guess.
He might as well answer with reclaiming my time. Reclaiming my time. Do you want to hear this story?
Because I had to sit through your shitty base t-ball game, son. I had to sit through so many shitty t-ball games. That's why.
At least he found a comfortable place to sit while they tell the story, right? You wouldn't want to, like, be somewhere where you could eat food or drink something while you have to listen to a horribly boring story. Let's be somewhere where we could both be murdered by hobos and no one would notice. And that'd be great. It ups the tension is what I'm saying, right? Get through this before we get killed by crackheads.
So the dad's like, do you want me to keep telling the story? And the kid's like, oh, yeah, dad, I couldn't possibly hear enough of this story. He's like, that's what I thought. Let's keep going. So with that useless little digression out of the way, we get back to the story. Now, this is how he gets back into the story. He's like, at this point, Allie was really having a hard time of it. Who the fuck is Allie? We haven't met or alluded to Allie up to this point. This is a character we've not met yet.
Let's help you out. It's his sister.
Yeah. Who's really important, apparently, whose personality is the equivalent of a black choker come to life. Who is by far the most reasonable person in this illness-riddled family. Like, she's the only person who I think has any sense going on here.
However, Allie's boyfriend gives us the greatest moment of this entire film in this scene. We see him coming to pick up Allie's boyfriend, and he does the, are you still a blind chick check to the blind girl? And yeah, I just wrote, in, just yeah, in case man, she's smart. Faking it. You never know when they're faking.
Yeah.
This gold bricker sees.
Oh, God. And then so the sister comes out and he needs to douchebag. Jackson needs to talk to her. And OK, I don't know how many of you have siblings. They talk brother to sister about 6 inches away from each other's face.
Ooh, yeah.
I would rather die. If someone told me you need to talk to your sister intensely, like staring into her eyes, you know, 4 inches of room, just kill me. They're like, just, I can't do it.
This is a theater thing, right? In theater, if you're 6 inches away from someone for more than 10 seconds, you have to either make out or fight them. Those are the rules of theater. And somebody didn't catch that. They were just like, no, 6 inches is great. Get a little closer.
Yeah. And
here's the amazing thing. Her performance is like there's three people inside her and they all get a turn to act for 10 seconds each. She might as well start juggling and do a backflip in between lines. Just like how the emotions are just all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. Jackson is like, hey, is Allie in there? Can I speak to Allie?
I mean, this is the part where I got really confused about who is sleeping together in this movie. Yeah. I thought I had it sorted out, and it went all the shit in the scene.
Pretty incesty movie, even for a Game of Thrones fan. Yeah. Because it seemed to be like pump faking you over who was fucking the blind girl, whether it was Jackson or Dre, too, right?
I assumed both, and now I'm very confused. That was what happened for me watching this movie.
Yeah. So, but the gist of the conversation, the uncomfortably close conversation that he has with his sister is, hey, sis, you need to chill out. And she's like, I'm going to fuck all the dudes.
Yeah, well,
I'll be back when I'm done all fucking all of them.
She is a Christian caricature of a party person. So she has to be like, whoa, weekend, huh?
Yeah,
business isn't
right.
If I do party and stuff, mine.
Yes. Yeah, a party girl as written by somebody who's only ever seen one of that when he closes his eyes and jacks off. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I did all of my work all week and now I'm going to go party, which is why it was weird that we were supposed to feel bad for this person. Because I'm like, yeah, get it, girl. Like, get out there and have some fun with motorcycle guy.
She's like, as long as I do shit during the week, I'm going to go unwind a bit. And it's like, that's a totally rational, perfect decision. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, alcoholic.
Their version of a bad girl is someone who gets all their work done during the week.
Yeah.
She might as well be like, I get straight A's, but on the weekends, I get straight A's. You know what I'm saying? Anal. Up my ass.
So,
you get it? Am I close enough?
So, yeah.
I have a French accent.
I found it on
now.
Google. It was the first option on Google. So, yeah.
It's alphabetical. That's close enough for me. All right, so she leaves. We cut to him laying in his bed late that night.
Oh, God.
Almost
it's
putting...
so okay, good.
If 40% of this movie is him translating the glasses, another 40% is him almost putting the glasses on.
Yeah. And if you're wondering why he's sleeping in his bed in the exact same full outfit he was just in the last scene, it's because that's actually his skin and he's an asexual cartoon character of a person.
Oh, never nude.
Dude, when he put the glasses on, if he looked down and saw a demon trying to jerk him off, this movie would have had me back. Especially if the demon looked like his sister, I would have been all about, I'm just saying, it didn't.
My favorite part is he puts on the glasses and so he starts to see, you know, again, the whispery library devils. And he holds up that 90s clear telephone everybody had where it's like clear and you can see the inner workings of it. And it's like, there's a bunch of whispers like that phone is the devil. Is there some Christian anti-clear 90s phone plot? I don't know.
No, there's literally demon voices on the phone going, not in service, not in service.
Not in service, yeah. Which means that the devil inspires when you lost the connection in the 90s up until 2005.
Or it means that the demons are just on the phone somewhere else in the fucking house going, oh, fuck, he's on the phone. Not in service.
I'm going to have to let you go, Frank.
That was my take, was that he was just like, he was tuning into a conversation already in progress because we get this important plot point where they're like, well, no, we can't go after the white guy because he's saved.
Oh, no. Okay, hold on. So he walks out. And he goes over toward Allie's room, and apparently there's some sort of devil Monday morning status meeting happening there.
All right.
It's the greatest thing ever. I would pay all the money in the world to remake this movie, but just like they go through all the boring shit that you actually have to go through with companies. Just like, and by the way, today is Calcamore's birthday. So there will be cake in hell later today.
Yeah. They might as well be saying, like, there's a new report cover on the TPS report. Like,
yes, right.
Seriously, like that level of status meeting. That's happening in her doorway, by the way. Like what? That's where they commence business, I guess.
I guess, because, he walks down the hallway, and then he hears the status meeting, and they're like, oh, it turns out that little twerp kid found the glasses, the one that looks like Good Universe Bo Burnham. And they're like, oh, well, let's torture him. They're like, no, he's too Christian. They're like, well, let's torture that blind chick he likes. And like, no, she's too Christian, too. And like, how about the daughter? It's like, yeah, she fucks.
Yeah.
Also, we have to point out that there is one person that they feel like they do have control over, and that's Dre. And why do they have control over Dre?
I don't know.
He's the black guy. Hashtag no racist.
Because he jerks off.
Yeah, okay.
And, and when they say that, we get a flash cut to him jerking off.
So great. It's so great. And it will come into play later. It will very much come into play later.
Yes.
And then they go on to discuss the venue of the office Halloween party that year. They're like, should we get how many? What is this fucking meeting?
Have it in the fucking house when you know he's got the secret hearing glasses?
Yeah, they already know it.
Yeah, but then right then he realizes that the demons are going after his sister. So he opens up her door for some reason. Shit blows around. And then the cheesiest, crappiest looking green demon shows up. He looks like he should be hovering over the word continue. Yes, no.
Yeah, it's like goosebumps. Not that happens.
I imagine the director said to the CGI guy, like, remember the scene where they open the door in Poltergeist? You've got like $5. What can you do?
Yeah, right. And I'd like to see some change. I'd like to see a little change on that $5.
I mean, I thought the row of fire under the demon's face, like the solid, like, clip art row of fire really gave the effect some depth.
And then the whole devil image they have, PowerPoint slides out of the picture through the window.
How are they going to know if it's...
It might as well just fold up and then, like,
yeah, what is it, like Superman 2 or whatever, where they're like, they're in the weird space window? It's kind of like that.
Oh.
I bet this plays really well with 3D glasses, actually. I bet it really
That's it. Sometimes you just got to watch.
They were ahead of their time.
You got to pay for everything.
That's why it's set in 2024, is that when the movie gets good, is when they catch up the technology.
All right, well, this movie is clearly just about to crank the insanity up to 11. So before it gets too carried away, we're going to pause for a quick break. But first, let me give Act 3 the hard sell. Can Jackson reach Ellie before it's too late? Will anyone react to anything like a human might? Will they find the satanic nose and mustache that goes with those glasses? Find out the answers to these questions and more when we return for the unapologetically insane conclusion of Invisible Enemies.
Minions!
Yes, Dark Lord Satan?
I have your evening assignments. Malkior, you will take a young girl's life tonight before she can be saved.
Yes, my lord.
And Carcophus, the Sendelsons are due for another fight, don't you think?
Oh, indeed they are, my lord.
Good. And Thomas, you'll be making Dre jerk off again.
Yeah, my lord,
Good, fly, my minions, fly! Thomas, why do you linger?
Yeah, it's just, so Malkior and Carcophagus, they always get different jobs.
Sure, uh-huh.
And it seems like, and I'm not complaining, you know, I love being a demon, I love it. I pretty much only get assigned to making African-American young men jerk off.
Do you? I hadn't noticed. That's crazy.
Yeah, so like last week it was Michael. Tonight it's Dre. The week before it was Anthony.
Wow, that's a crazy coincidence that you got the same assignment.
Yeah, so do you think maybe I could do something different next week?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, next week, you are going to make this kid Raul jerk off.
Yeah, seriously?
But he's Hispanic, totally different. Come on.
I hate it here.
And we're back for more of this shit. When we last left our hero, he overheard Satan threatening to touch his little sister. So we're going to rejoin him running from his house to save her. But before he can leave, he has to talk to Dre, who apparently lives on Jackson's porch. Now, either we believe that or we believe that the last time we saw him, he was on the porch. And then the next time we saw him, he had returned to the porch and was about to knock on the door as Jackson runs out.
And he becomes startled, and his acting choice for startled is raise both your arms above your head in jazz hands and go, whoa, like real quick. Oh, God, it's so good.
Well, we have established that he was just jacking off. So, you know, I'm sure we're all married here. We've all had that, like, pretending to be overly surprised thing. You know, yeah. So, no, I did that. No, I had no idea you were going to walk in on me.
Yeah, I was just jacking off on your porch. Sorry. I mean, no, not jacking off.
Oh, it's crazy. I was just Wikipediaing women's rights here. And yeah. I was just reading some Grace Lee Boggs on the internet.
I tried to Wikipedia women's rights, but like, you know, it's alphabetical, so I got trapped at anal. Yeah. That's how it goes. Like.
And they have a right to do this, as it turns out. Yeah.
I have to say, for a second, I thought Noah was going to say, we're all married, so we all know the porch jack-off routine. And I was like, I thought we were going to get like a real intimate view into Noah's marriage, but I guess not.
Something's going without
saying.
When you're married,
you jerk off wherever you get a chance.
So, but I love this moment. This is one of the greatest reveals ever. Dre is not quite convinced that Jackson has magical glasses that allows him to see demonic activity. But then he says, and I quote, Dre, I know about the pornography. So with that in mind, I want to tell you guys all that I have magical devil glasses, and Thomas, Aaron, Eli, I know about the pornography.
No!
What?
That's
who told you? Who told you? Tell me who told you. There's no way anyone would know. Yeah. If you're looking for proof that someone is a psychic, that's about as unconvincing as it gets. Telling a college dude, I know about them. You could walk up to any college dude right now and say, I know about the pornography. And they say, yeah, no, everybody knows that.
Like, everybody knows about it.
It's on my email. Did you get my email? I emailed you some of my favorite pornography.
It's on my phone right now. I'm looking at it right in front of you right now.
No, see, I guess I read this scene as having slightly different subtext. I read the rest of the line as being, Dre, I know about the pornography. The pornography of the white women. It was just like implied a little bit. Like, and he's like, oh, you're right. I should stop doing that because this is Christian world and fuck that.
Side note, no matter how good friends you think you are with Thomas, he doesn't want to know what porn you're into lately. So just telling everybody not to make the mistakes I did.
No, just you. I actually, everybody else is fine, just not Eli.
Yeah, that's no, funny. I don't think you're as good a friend
as Thomas
you think.
Send Thomas your pornography, everybody. Send Thomas your pornography. It's better than most tweets he gets.
philosophersinspace@gmail.com. Bonus points for cosplay, obviously.
And Mexican fart porn. He's really into that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but Dre, of course, is shocked that he knows about the pornography.
My note is he is so shaken that someone knows about his pornography that he's going to help Jackson fight invisible demons. That must be some weird porn that you're worried about.
I was so confused because pornography is so normal to me that I was like, oh, it's kids. Like, that's why he's doing it because it's bad because it's kids. And then I realized, nope, it's just normal consenting adults fucking on camera.
Yes.
No, it's not even that because we get to see another cutaway to him jerking off and it's just like Playboy. That's all it is.
Yeah. He's using a fucking analog magazine for this shit. Yeah, so he's like, but who told you about the porn? He's like, the demons. He's like, okay, now everything's sane. I'm going to help you.
Who told you about the porn? The demons or anybody. Literally anybody.
Meanwhile, by the way, Dad is still telling this story to his son. We know because the story's still going.
Oh, God.
Literally, he just goes, hey, you want me to tell this story or do you want to go get lunch with your mom? And the kid's like, what? Why would you?
Oh, wait. Is lunch an option? Because I want to get out of this place.
Yeah.
Like, fuck
it. That's movie,
and again,
Dad.
Denny's, yes, please.
No, let's go get lunch with mom.
And again, they're trying to play it like it's such a good story that the son wouldn't even dream of leaving the future warehouse. Also, if they left, that would require another futuristic set. And where are they going to find another impressive futuristic empty warehouse?
I think this just proves that like Christian producers are hampered by their lack of cocaine use. Cause like anyone doing cocaine would immediately realize you should make this into a tight 30 and like sell it to the Jesus Zone as like a Twilight Zone ripoff. And we're all rich. It's so easy, but no, 38 minutes. No one's going to watch 38 minutes. Fuck that.
And and all you'd have to do to get it down to 30 is cut these stupid fucking scenes. But So the dad's like, it was actually right at this warehouse where we're standing that the third act of this film took place because we could really only afford to light one space. You get it. So they show up at this drug party. Now, veterans of Christian movies, we've gotten to see a lot of ideas of what Christians seem to think parties look like. This is one of my favorites. Like, basically, party means lots of chain link fences for no reason, right?
And we have to talk about the almost drugs. Everything in this shot is so they have a bong with a literal cork in it. They have a bong. I don't know how they got one. Someone's bong. It's got a cork on both sides.
Yeah. It's like a safety cork. It was like a police evidence locker bong that they were allowed to use as long as there's safety corks in it.
Right.
There are pills being handed out in Petri dishes.
No, they've got them in those little plastic ramekins like they give them to you in the hospital, right?
Exactly.
That's what they think because they think, well, that's what drugs come in, right? In the little plastic cups.
Yeah, they practically had the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, like the...
And then my favorite piece of drugs is the world's fattest, longest line humanly possible.
Yeah.
It's someone obviously dumped an entire baby powder container out on the table, made it a rectangle, and was like, that's the cocaine. It's hilarious. Tony Montana would have been like, that's a little much.
And for all that cocaine, as far as I can tell, the drug that all these kids are on is slow-mo. Like, they are, which we all know from watching like 90s movies, like this is the most dangerous of all party drugs. And at any moment, Blade is going to show up and murder all of these children who are clearly vampires. But anyway. Oh, yeah.
So, okay, now we have to put Allie, the sister character, in danger. Here's how we're going to do it. The party game, they were playing a game of like fucking balls out, pin the tail on the donkey here. Is that what we're supposed to believe was going
no
on?
I have no fucking idea. I do not even have a guess. Like, I can't, I'm not a creative enough human to think of what they could even have been thinking.
Have you never, guys never gone to a rave and gotten tied up with a rope and walked across a beam because you were on drugs? Like, what parties do y'all go to? This is like Tuesday, right?
So, yeah, I guess, yeah. It's a Brooklyn thing. So, yeah.
I've been to black sheet parties where they would be like, I don't understand what she's doing. That doesn't seem safe.
Yeah. What is her consent word here? Like,
yeah. So they've blindfolded her and raised her with a rope up to a beam that's like 8 foot high. And she's going to walk blindfolded across the beam, except she's not going to do that. Right. No. She's just going to freak out and not do that.
And so they're like, oh, what do we do? And then Dre says, put the glasses on. And then I, in my notes, I wrote, see if there's any pornography up there. Like, he thinks they're just like porn scene glasses.
I mean, your sister is tied up and blindfolded. So, yeah. You know, got a thing for white girls.
I'm pretty much there. She just puts in a ball gag and I can work with this.
Yeah, so she's got a rope in a circle around her like it's a lasso in an old-timey Western.
Yes,
and the rope
which,
goes
by the
up.
Way, would be the most dangerous part of this. Yeah. It would be for her to fall with a noose around her ribcage. Yeah.
It would be far safer if there was no fucking rope to begin with. So she, and the rope goes up to an old-timey spinny wheelie pulley thing, and then down to a dude that's just monitoring, I guess. And so my question for you guys is, do the demons, the guy holding the rope, the guy belaying her, if you will, he just falls over. Like, he's like, my heart or something. Like, he just falls for no reason. Like, is that the demons or?
I genuinely think that they think that, like, that's the way drugs work. Like.
Well, no, there was one demon on his hands and knees behind him, and the other demon came up from the front. See? And that's basically what we see, right? Because he puts on the, because Dre says, put on the glasses, see if there's any demons here. And he puts on his glasses, and sure enough, there's demons every fucking where.
Right. And so the rope falls out of that guy's hand, and it falls below, and it like hits a guy who falls over at the weight of the rope hitting him. And then this is the best part. So now picture it. We have Allie is just standing on a beam with a rope tied around her, and it's dangling to some party dude. Party dude falls down. He pulls the rope to get back up. A full grown man pulls the rope to get back up. And then we go up to Allie and she like sort of leans slightly. She's like, oh.
I have suddenly been used to pick up 180 pounds of dude. I might have to lean over.
Yeah.
So Jackson has to save her because the demons are now, I shit you not, pinching her boobs and jumping on the beam.
There's no way that demon was directed to pinch boobs. They were like, great, so you guys try and throw her off. And then they looked at the foot and they were like, really, Alan? And he was like, what did he say? Distract her. What is Alan doing? Well, Dan took the shake in the thing and I figured they don't like it if you pinch their boobs. So that's what my
this
demon
was produced by
boobs.
The Weinstein Company. And now it all makes sense.
Now, I'll be a senator one day and this is going to come back. I know. It's fine.
Long form metaphor for puberty.
I see how they got such a good DP now, though. So, All right, so Jackson rushes up to help her from the peril, I guess. Again, she's 8 feet off the ground. If she, like, hung off the thing from her fucking feet, or from her hands, rather, like, somebody could just grab her legs and help her down. But no, Jackson's got to go up there, put on his demon glasses so he can tell where the demons are, and then stop and ask Jesus for help.
Yeah.
Okay, now hear me out. How amazing would this movie be if Jesus just vaulted onto the board and did like a sweet flip? I would be all about this movie. He just shows up in a leotard. He's like, what are you doing? Flip, full flip. Got her. Let's get down from here. Bam.
Or he does like a balance beam routine, you're saying? Like,
yeah, yeah, thing? Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
He's
exactly.
Rolling goes that all ball power around his shoulders.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I honestly think what we get is even better than that. He says, because every Christian movie, the guy at some point has to say, oh, Jesus, I can't do it without your help. And Jesus is like, no, I got you, man. And then we get this white glow as he gets his Jesus power up, at which time the demon burns to death from the lightning that shoots out of his chest.
This is where I had a question for you guys as the experts, right?
You just had one question here.
Yeah, just one. No, like, for me, this was a pretty impressive, gritty reboot of the Care Bear stare. But I was curious, from y'all's perspective, like, on the scale of Jesus Super Saiyans, like, how many Vegetas would you give this? Like, of the chest lasers you've seen.
Yeah, no, I think we got to go all the way back to episode one to get a better Jesus Super Saiyan than this.
Yeah, on a scale from Krillin to purple gay guy, this is a solid 7. I don't remember what that purple gay guy's called, but everybody likes him.
So I just wrote what about 9 times in my notes here, but Allie apparently is safe. So the crowd claps.
Yeah. So they hadn't even noticed anything when the rope holder guy died of a heart attack and fell to his death. There were demons and shit. She was trapped. Nobody noticed. They're all just, yeah, party, man. How about those drugs we all definitely ate? Those were fun. And then he does nothing, like nothing happens and the demons are gone and the entire party just stops and they like simultaneously, oh my God, that was amazing.
Yeah, golf clapping it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Okay, because I'm assuming that the demon glasses are required to see the demons and the chest lasers and stuff. So what is their experience here?
Nothing.
Yep. Dude right. Caused girl to fail her awesome balance beam test, I think.
In their experience, mustn't he just have gotten up there, screamed Jesus Christ's name, pointed his chest at his sister, and then, like, that's it?
Yes!
And they were just like, point your chest at your sister. There you go.
I have actually a group acting note here. I feel like someone was in the background shouting at the note, more slack jawed, slacker, get it all the way open.
All right. Now, apparently that's the end of the story, right? Like, we have a little wrap up scene. I'm thinking, oh, he just found his Jesus chest powers. Now we'll go do something useful with them. But no, that's the whole fucking thing. We basically just have to cut back to dad and son to wrap things up, right?
Just like, hey, you want me to keep telling the story? Dad, the story is over. Right. But the movie is not, so what do you say?
He's like, you want me to keep telling the story? It's over. Well, is that any different than the story I was telling?
Yeah,
like, I'll just
right,
say stuff.
Right.
Like, it's not, I could just say random objects.
Yeah, he's like, you remember when the blind chick said that there was stuff that we couldn't see? And the kid's like, Dad, this is a 37-minute movie. I remember all the fucking parts, okay? Everything happened in the last half hour. He's like, well, you know, she completed that thought in a different scene. So we go back to this other story, right? The one that we just wrapped up. And the gang is doing Bible study on the porch. Again, Dre lives on the fucking porch. And he says, this is how he opens up. He goes, I never meant to get in so deep. Now, is this a porn reference?
Yeah. No, he was like 7 pornographies deep.
That's how many. I get it. You know, when you get too pornography deep, I've been there. Like, she takes the whole day away from the house, and then all of a sudden you're Googling very, very specific terms and very, very specific actresses. I know what Dre was talking about, and I get it.
Do y'all measure this in terms of numbers of tabs open at a time? I'm just like, what's our metric here? How many levels of Inception?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
This is in magazine analog times. He just had a magazine. Like, it was just open. How deep?
How do you do the multiple tabs in analog? Is it like five Playboys like spread out in front of you?
Noah's the only person who's gonna know this. Yeah, no, I'm in my 40s. I do know. Yes, you would. You would spread out the magazines and have like varying levels. Yeah, no, that's what we had to do back in the day. Back in my day when we jerked off. Yeah.
Just Noah making up his own stories by cutting them together. And
that's kind of what you had to...
Now these two fellas and these lady are together.
I love the narrative where like he's hidden the midget porn under his own pillow and then like he finds it and he's like, oh, I didn't know this was a... Well, maybe I'll have a little look, you know, just like try it, right?
Noah with a pornographic flip book. There we go. All right. Flip number 75. Rockefeller.
So now, okay. So Dre has admitted that he went too deep into his pornography. Now the blind chick has to have her confession moment where she goes, yeah, I never meant to be so sarcastic, but I'm blind.
What? Yeah, that's her sin. Like it one.
Yeah.
We've got incest going on. We got pornography. And she's like, well, I'm sarcastic sometimes. And so it's just as bad. Like she's trying to do that fake thing. Like, look, we're all sinners. One time I like made a joke or something.
Yeah. I would say my biggest fault is that I work too hard and I can start Monday, by the way.
No. We get it, Cindy. You're a Mary Sue character. Don't be such a bitch about it. It's fine.
And then she asks him, like, what did they say about you? And he's like, oh, that my haircut is so fucking stupid I couldn't be caught dead around the demons. No, the other thing. It's like, why wouldn't they take you? And it's because they belong to Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the big deal. And then she also has this line, which I fucking love, because apparently they didn't realize it was innuendo because they were talking about Jesus. Where, you know, she's like, but we're not unarmed in this fight. We have the Bible and the body of Christ. And then she says, and I quote, the one who is in you is the greater than the one who is in the world. I mean, we know that phrase is a dick in your ass is better than two in your bush. I get where she's going, but we could have modernized it a little bit. But I'm sorry. This movie has had a plot, apparently. Jackson still has to go save Allie's soul in the most incest heavy scene of the film. Right?
This movie has more endings than Lord of the Rings, right? We all agree. At some point, somebody's just like, fuck already, exactly like with the Hobbits.
Right?
And like Noah said, because we had the armor of God quote, it means we need to have the I love you too much not to bother you about Jesus scene.
The whole like, you know, it's a metaphor about how when you annoy people for Jesus, you're fighting demons with chest lasers, aren't you? If you think about it. So he goes to her room to have a talk with her where he's going to sit uncomfortably close to her. Like, I expected him to start rubbing her leg as they were having this conversation.
And this entire scene is so great because it's how many Christian-ese ways can they say how many dudes she's banged? Like,
yes.
You don't even want to know the stunts I've pulled. And then she's like, oh, I don't know the sense you pulled. Oh, you don't know what I've done. It's like, I have S-E-X.
I want to know what Allie did, because he's like, no, lots of people have done terrible things. And she's like, no, you do not know. I want to cut to her, like, stripping off a tiny mustache and, like, in the 1940s and then straightening the bowl cut into a girl's do. And she's like, there you go, Adolf. They'll never know. Your name is Allie.
Well, I like this idea though. Like, I mean, because when I first watched this, my first thought was definitely a soft incest vibe. And then I was like wondering if that was just like modern porn trends. And now I like the idea of like a meta story where this kid literally saw his sister in some incest porn and like needed to come talk to her about the fact that she was in that incest porn and that he enjoyed watching it. But doesn't really know how to have that conversation. And the glasses are like a metaphor. It's a metaphor for that conversation.
I get it. It's like when you find out that Corey Chase is actually a mom and you're like, how do they? Because they're eventually going to be like, hey, mom. Gosh. Wow. You know? Okay, maybe
I
just
also
me.
Have thought about that.
You don't
yeah,
think
I was...
about Corey Chase like sitting down with her kids someday and being like, you're not going to want to watch mommy's anything. Just don't. you like all the red new trucks? Okay, well then let's yeah, just
do,
leave
do
it at that.
She's going to say, you don't even want to know the stunts I've pulled.
Yeah, right. But yeah, okay, so they're having this heartfelt conversation. Keep in mind, we know nothing at all about their history or relationship. So all of the stuff they're working through is all new to us, right? That's how yeah. sloppily this fucking thing's written. And oh, by the way, my music note here is if you do one note at a time and you echo it long enough, you don't even need a pattern. Oh, such an insult to every pianist in the world.
Yeah, no, I definitely had a reoccurring theme throughout this that it was like, what if we do Claire de Lune, but if we just like leave out the notes?
Yeah, right. We slow it down to Inception levels.
Right. And the conversation gets so boring that it literally cuts away from that to Dad being like, anyways, you know, that conversation went somewhere. I promise. Yeah, it like did. Like I just sort of vaguely mentioned Jesus and she vaguely mentioned our child, but she got saved eventually. She got
yeah,
saved.
It turns into one big you had to be there of a story he's telling. No, I swear it was great. There's some really good drama. There was some acting. It was awesome. I swear. You know what? Fucking kids.
The moral of the story is yada, yada, yada. Is that what I mean?
Yeah, right. Right.
And then, so he's like, he comes back out of it with his son and he's like, and you know what's weird is the glasses stopped working right about the time I started taking my pills.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, the schizophrenia wore off. I mean, the glasses stopped working or something.
Yeah, right. Because we've got to cut back to Dad and son for yet another wrap up. Again, 38-minute movie. This is the ninth ending. And he's like, yeah, and then I kept hounding her about Jesus shit, and eventually she caved so I would leave and she could masturbate again. But we all, and but he says, but he's like, but it's all a happy story, but we almost lost her. And I'm like, lost her? She was 9 feet up at most. She almost broke her ankle. Let's be realistic. And then, yes, then the glasses stopped working because apparently God created a fucking set of demon glasses, brought them into existence and placed them right in front of her so that he could get his sister off of a beam. That's the only thing that Jesus could think of to do with the goddamn glasses he had invented there.
No, again, mostly it's for watching Dre jerk off. It was mostly for that.
I think you're a little hard on the beam metaphor, though, Noah. I mean, like, it is exactly as high as the stakes are for actual religion. So I think it's exactly 8 feet off the ground is where the stakes are.
Again, the stakes of this movie, just for clarity, the first time I met Noah, I watched his roommate jump from twice that height because Heath told him he couldn't. That is the literal is now a movie we're watching.
And then this is where they do the reveal, which I guess you guys were ahead of me. I was confused at this because he says, oh, you know, the woman I married, she carries it. Oh, mom carries a stick. So I was like, okay, so he did marry the blind girl, Cindy. But during the story, they both call her Cindy. Like he never says like, oh, your mother or and the kid never says like, oh, so that's mom. No, it's like they call her Cindy. And then later it's a reveal that it's the mom. They just don't ever call her that for the purposes of a big reveal.
Yeah, it's the Christian version of How I Met Your Mother, where they realized that Robin needed to be the mother and they were running out of seasons. So they were just like, right. So now I want an old man fucker. I don't know, Matt. One of our main characters is a rapist and this has really gotten away from us.
I mean, I agree. Their audience is going to come out of this being like, didn't they say she was a psychologist? Like, this relationship doesn't work. This is not morally acceptable. Like, she's a devil, right?
Yeah, no, well, he was a patient. And it was like the Florence Nightingale effect. So they leave the room to go find mom. And we linger on the room long enough to hear demons in the room. So I want to make it very clear that the closing message is, remember, kids, there's demons everywhere constantly.
Yeah, I know. They leave with do you think they're here now? And then everybody, you know, the son and dad leave and you think, are we going to see demons? Nope. We're just going to hear some demons doing like a frat boy chant where they're like, no, God, no, hell, no truth. I think that's what they're saying. It's like, no, God, no, hell, no truth. Chug, chug. Like there's a demon frat party going on.
I do really want to break down this theory. Like, what are they saying when they really say no God, no hell, no truth? Is this like a Jordan B. Peterson, like presuppositional? If you don't have God, then truth doesn't make any sense. And if you don't have hell, there's no morality. Or like,
KNOW?
What do you mean?
Are those good demons or bad demons? Are they the good spirits? I have no fucking idea. Yeah.
And then at the end, of course, we get the Screwtape Letters quote, which is wonderful.
To paraphrase, not believing in demons is stupid. So is believing in them too hard. So you want to find a medium demon believing level.
Well, so the quote is like, don't be too, carried away and obsessed with demons. So, don't make a whole fucking movie about them or anything. Like, that would be one thing you wouldn't want to do.
All things in moderation, including schizophrenia, middle of the road schizophrenia.
A touch of schizophrenia is good.
All right. So would anyone like to take a stab at telling me the moral of this story? Or barring that, even the plot?
If you're blind, don't be so negative about it.
Don't jerk off to
white
people.
Not believing
porn.
In anything is stupid. Never.
Blind people have to only believe in nothing because they can't see anything. So they literally, you right, have a conversation, you're like, are there things? And they're like, no, I can't see them. There are no things.
All right, so it's definitely an anti-blind thing. I think we established that. All right, so to close things off, I want each of you to imagine that you have a pair of evil Satan glasses that allows you to see the darkness that lurks inside the hearts of men. And then I want you to look around at the people on the call and tell me what you see.
Okay. Well, the anger demon is quivering in fear next to Noah, asking him to tone it down. The Jew demon is whispering in Aaron's ear that he's not fooling anyone. And I'm just seeing the people who tweet at Thomas. It's weird. It's just the people who tweet at him. Not anything. Something about not being nice enough. I can't hear. It's a lot of... They're all dressed as anime characters.
Anybody else want to try on the glasses?
I put them on and stared in Eli's direction and just turned to a pillar of salt, so it didn't...
I mean, if I'm being totally honest, like I said, it looks exactly the same. I live in the same universe y'all live in, and it's just the same horrible void, and we just call them glasses. They're not demon glasses. This is where we are now.
You don't need any magic to look through your glasses and see me jerking off. That's for sure.
I put on the demon glasses, and they corrected my astigmatism, so that's all. And also, we all look at a lot of porn, but that's not even news. It's porn and better vision.
All right. Well, Thomas, Aaron, can't thank you enough for suffering alongside us tonight. Now, our listeners have already heard some of the really cool places they can go to hear more from you. And of course, we'll have a few of them linked on the show notes. But you guys have a new project out now as well, right?
Yeah. And we're really excited about it. I think it's such a great idea. It's philosophy, but we use sci-fi, our favorite sci-fi episodes of stuff, to explain different concepts. So like we did Black Mirror and talked about the experience machine. We did Rick and Morty and talked about possible worlds. It's been a lot of fun. I really hope people just search Philosophers in Space on whatever podcast thingy and check it out. It is so fun to be doing real philosophy, but also get to kind of fanboy out about some really cool shows. So it's been a good time.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. That's like one of the real ins for philosophy now is in our science fiction. But the problem with that is that you can only sort of do a brush, right? You can only do like within the most movies anyway, you can only really get the very basic end of it. So like a deeper dive into some of that would be really fucking cool. You guys have any plans of doing any Westworld episodes? Ton of good philosophy.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Westworld. And Aaron, teaches philosophy. He actually knows things. So he's finding us all these cool readings.
That's the opposite of what teaching philosophy means.
That's a good point. Yeah.
That's great. As long as you say it, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. He knows fewer things than we do, but he teaches philosophy. So he knows where to find these things that he doesn't know.
Awesome. And well, that's going to do it for our review of Invisible Enemies. That's not going to do it for the episode just yet. We still need to sucker ourselves into doing this again. So Eli, tell us what's on deck.
Salty the Songbook.
Oh, finally.
Yeah. If you love Bonnie the Dinosaur and you love acid, you're going to love next week's episode.
Do love acid.
Yeah. Well, you're a fucking philosophy teacher, obviously.
I mean, so with that, don't do drugs.
All right, so with that to look forward to, we're going to bring episode 132 to a merciful close. Once again, huge thanks to Thomas and Aaron for hanging out with us tonight, and perhaps even huger thanks to all the Patreon donors that help make the show go. If you'd like to count yourself among their ranks, you can make a per-episode donation at patreon.com/godawful and thereby earn early access to an ad-free version of every episode. You can also help us a ton by leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes and by sharing the show on all your various social media platforms. And if you enjoyed this show, be sure to check out our sibling shows, The Scathing Atheist, Citation Needed, and The Skeptic Right, available on iTunes, Stitcher, and everywhere else that podcasts live. God damn it, now Thomas has more shows than us again. Fuck.
Starting a new show.
And of course, if you have questions, comments, or cinematic suggestions, you can email godawfulmovies@gmail.com. Legal services for this podcast are provided by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres. Our theme song was written and performed by Ryan Slotnick of Evil Giraffes on Mars. All other music was written and performed by our audio engineer, Morgan Clark, and was used with permission. Thanks again for giving us a chunk of your life this week. For Heath Enright and Eli Bosnick, I'm No Illusions, promising to work hard to earn another chunk next week. Until then, we'll leave you with a Breakfast Club close.
Jackson eventually got LASIK, but it was demon LASIK, so now he sees demons 24/7 and his life is a waking nightmare.
Dre gets to sleep in the foyer when it gets really cold.
God rewarded Cindy's faith with the gift of sight. Not really, she's still blind.
You want us to keep doing this episode? Just kidding, we'll still keep doing this. Also, Thomas's score doesn't count because we edit our shows.
Yeah, the
you,
one that
you want. You
minions.
Want voices?
Oh, nice.
Oh, obviously we want.
Yeah, great.
We want demon voices. Correct, Eli?
Yeah, except for Thomas.
Shut up.
No, literally, because you're just Thomas. They're demons.
Oh, really?
And you're Thomas.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Am I like, okay. So, like,
I love that. That's the trust we built with Thomas. That he's like, all right, like, I'm just going to be me. Okay. Fuck you. No, seriously?
Now I'm not sure. What am I doing?
No, they're right. I've read the script, and that's absolutely the stronger choice.
Read ahead, mystery man. Read ahead.
It's the best interstitial ever.
All right. You guys ready?
I am ready.
Yep.
All right.
The preceding podcast was a production of Puzzle and a Thunderstorm, LLC. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.